At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
It's the Fri-Yay Cocktail, presented by Anna Glavinsky.
Now, I'm lucky enough to live in a place where I get to choose between beach or mountains. And I think that's a really, really special choice to be able to enjoy. And what I choose most of the time is mountains. Maybe you agree with me, maybe you're not, you don't. I think mountains are incredible. Somebody who shares that passion is Robin Patton, and she's got way more to say about it than I do. She's written a book called The Mountains, Journeys in High Places. Talks about her own personal experiences and what mountains have meant to other cultures and how they've inspired myths and legends throughout time. Robin, are you able to hear me now?
Okay.
Fantastic. Great to have you here. But basically, you couldn't hear me then, but I was just talking about how wonderful mountains are because I live in a place where I get to choose between beach and mountains and normally choose mountains. I'm really, really interested in hearing all about your stories and everything that you've got to say because mountains really are just magical places, aren't they?
Well, and that's interesting because you said you prefer mountains over beaches, but there's people who prefer the ocean and seasides over mountains. And I have tossed that question around so many times of how do you end up being a mountain person versus an ocean person versus a desert person? And yeah. I don't have an answer to that, but I will say I have now moved to the desert and I will always be a mountain person. I wanted to be a desert person because I love this community, but mountains are who I am. And that is what this book is about.
You know, I would have never imagined a desert life until I read a book, actually very quite recently. It was just a fiction book, but it was about a family who had lived for generations, you know, throughout their whole ancestral history in the desert. And I just thought, wow, it sounds more beautiful than I had ever really given it consideration to.
Yeah. I mean, deserts are incredible, but they're not mountains.
But they're not mountains. So what is it for you then, in your words? You know, you can't maybe explain why other people choose something different. You choose mountains. Tell us why.
I grew up with them, and that's the whole first chapter of this book. My beginnings were in the mountains of Montana. And what was interesting, though, is my father was working down in Arizona. And so I spent part of the year in the Sonoran Desert and part of the year in the mountains of Montana. And the mountains were home. But part of that is the experience. And also, I think part of that is the influence of my parents and grandparents, who were very different people and introduced me to mountains in different ways. My grandmother was an artist. My grandfather just loved the land, and we would go riding, and he would show me where things bloomed when, and he knew when the birds would arrive and the cycles of the seasons, and he shared that with me in that mountain landscape. And my father was a scientist, and he taught me the science of the mountains. And my mother was just, she was an amateur naturalist, you could say. And we would go exploring in the mountains and learning the plants and learning the animals. So there was this embedded experience in the mountains. So they just became part of who I am. And from an early on, I always say this is because I had three brothers and I needed to get away. I would go wandering solo. And I've always just enjoyed wandering solo in the mountains, and there's so much to explore. So I think it was that early connection and just growing up with so many different influences that made me open my eyes and see the place for what it is.
And I mean, mountains aren't always the safest places either. You know, you talked about the science, the creativity of it there. What about sort of the risk aspect, the risk element? Do you always play it quite safe, or have you liked to push yourself to sort of, you know, really scale mountains as well?
I am a total conservative, especially when I'm solo. I play it safe. And I, for instance, I always carry a personal locator with me now that they're available. I am very in the mountains of Montana. I always tell people I go solo. I don't recommend it. It's grizzly bear country. But I always, you know, I carry my bear spray and I am bear aware, which I think makes me more aware of my surroundings too, because you have to do that. But I am not a risk taker. I never have been. I know just by being solo, you're taking risks, but the mountain is not a benign environment, and you can't go into it thinking it cares about you. It doesn't. And there is some of that in the book where it's like, okay, you know, the wind is blowing at me. No, it's not. The wind is just blowing. So yeah, I'm not a risk taker.
Okay, got that and understood loud and clear. So you talk about your personal experiences in the mountains. Which mountains have you visited? Obviously the ones you grew up
in. The book takes place, these are journeys, the book developed over a lifetime, and the journeys take place across the planet. From New Zealand to Norway, there's a couple chapters in Scotland. There's a couple chapter in my home of the Rocky Mountains, and then on the coast in the Sierra Nevadas. It's mostly the Rocky Mountains that I've been in, but I have also gotten to know the Scottish Mountains quite well. And so those journeys and those mountains across the planet came together into this book. And I use those journeys to explore the many different ways we think about mountains and experience mountains.
So let's just start with one of those perspectives so we can get a flavor of what it is that you mean.
Okay, well, so what I look at is I start with the sacred, and then I go to the scientific and the romantic, and then there's this philosophical and the solo and mountains as home. But for example, it's a loose chronology historically. So I start with a sacred mountain because that is probably our oldest way of knowing mountains. And that was a journey that I did in New Zealand. And I just did a trek around the Maori sacred volcano of Ngarahoe, which I'll never be able to pronounce that right, but that's as close as I can come. And it is a sacred mountain. It is... you are not supposed to climb these sacred mountains in the Maori tradition. That volcano was Mount Doom in Lord of the Rings.
Wow.
So thousands and thousands of people climbed this sacred mountain. So I use that trek to look at a couple of things. Basically, why do mountains compel us to think in that broader perspective? Because there are sacred mountains in all cultures. And what does it mean for a mountain to be sacred for somebody like me, a European, Euro-American, coming in and trekking in this sacred landscape? Mm-hmm. And then also the tension and the conflicts that arise between different ideas of what is sacred for a landscape. You know, that was the sacred mountain. So it's just looking at the history of the sacred mountain, the cultural aspects of the sacred mountain, and also, which I've done in each chapter, is what is the mountain's influence on us? Why does the mountain compel or inspire that sense of the sacred? And in the case of the sacred, I think partly it's because it reaches up. We can stand on Earth and look up to the heavens with a mountain. And that's what many cultures say. And so it's like a connection between our earthly existence and the heavens above.
And was it that mountain, or I know there's another one that was granted a status of right. So it's, you know, it's almost treated like a person with human rights. Like it's been given rights legally that basically it can't be messed with.
I don't know the definite answer to that. I don't think it was that particular mountain, but I do know that since I was there, they have put more restrictions on, you know, visiting these sacred areas, and that it's become much more addressed, this conflict.
And in your opinion, there. Is that the right way to go? Should we be protecting mountains more and more? Or
in my opinion, yes. And I think we need to have that respect for other cultures, and we need to have that respect for the mountains. So
absolutely. Other things that you talk about in your book, you said scientific understandings, for example.
Yeah. Well, I started out life as a scientist, and I couldn't do it. It was too claustrophobic. I had the artist in the, anyway. So mountains actually are quite important in the development of geology, ecology, natural history. If you go back to the 1900s when these things were developing, or not the, yeah, 19th century, when that science was developing, mountains were very significant because of their gradients biologically, ecologically, physically. So they were very important in science. And so for that chapter on the scientific mountain, I returned to the Grand Teton Range in Wyoming. Incredible mountains, where I did the research for my master's degree in science. And what I explore in that chapter is the how a scientist can go into a place as incredible as the Tetons and collect factual data, but come out with a knowing that goes far beyond the facts. And just this intimate interaction with a place. So you understand the cycles, you understand the patterns of vegetation, you understand this sort of factual level of the place, but to be there and watch the animals that live there, the plants growing, the rivers flowing, to embed yourself in that place so intimately in the data collection process gives you a perspective beyond just science. And it's that deep sense of beauty, of sort of an essence that goes beyond the rational. And what I say in the end of that chapter is that the scientists who have helped the general public better understand the need for environmental protections or just respect for the natural area are the ones who tap into that sense of beauty, that sense of joy, that comes out of nature. And beauty, I was thinking about this, a healthy ecosystem supports us as humans. A healthy ecosystem is also beautiful. A degraded, polluted ecosystem is not beautiful. And so to tap into that beauty helps people understand nature in a way beyond the science. So it goes from how mountains are important for science, but also how embedding yourself in the scientific world can open up doors into other ways of knowing. And that's sort of the bottom line of this book, is that all these ways of knowing, philosophical, romantic, sacred, scientific, they don't conflict. They're all part of this beautiful whole. So
they can all be true at the same time. And you're talking about the beauty of the mountains, but also the importance of them for scientific work, for understanding, for protecting our planet. But if you compare a mountain range to the rainforest, for example, you don't always see them, at least to the public perspective, they're not as important. You know, they're not the lungs of the planet. You know, they're not the most beautiful, fertile places. So why do you feel that they hold so much value, you know, scientifically and to our understanding of the planet and nature?
Well, in the beginning of sort of the scientific exploration, what the mountains do. So if you start at the base of a mountain, you're down in the forests. And as you move up, you go through these different vegetation types, different life zones, up into rock and ice. And so, like, for example, in the Tetons, within 4 miles, you're going from lodgepole pine to rock and ice. And at the same time, you get the climatic changes. And so initially, the early geologists, they didn't call themselves ecologists, but they were, and the early botanists could go to a mountain and see these changes. And Alexander von Humboldt is the one who really showed how this was the same as what you see on the planet. These changes from dense forests out to rock and ice up in the poles. So as far as importance for today as the global climate, the global cycles and everything, I couldn't even compare them to the rainforest, but that point that the mountains were they hold so much biodiversity in a small area, and that allowed science to really focus on that biodiversity and how it changes. And that's true today. I mean, if you walk across an alpine meadow, it changes so quickly just because of the microclimates there. And so I wouldn't even begin to compare the significance of these places to the rainforest today, but they are an important part of our globe, our planet.
Absolutely. And just finally, you know, wrapping it up and talking about who this book is for, you know, as I've already told you, I definitely feel like I am a mountain person. I'm very interested in your book. But what if you don't even know if you're a mountain person? Because I grew up in London and didn't know I was a mountain person until I went to the Alps when I was about 23. And I had no idea. I had no idea the impact that they would have on me. I was like a mountain person without knowing it. There must be millions and billions of those people who don't even know that they're mountain people. Do you think your book is also for them? Will it get across the beauty of the mountains? Or is it for somebody who already knows and just wants to go deeper?
I think it's for both. You know, early on, my editor said, okay, how are we going to classify this book? And I went, I have no idea.
It's everything.
It's everything. So I think that people who don't know the mountains can find something in it. And I think people who love the mountains can find something in it. It has history, ecology, personal narrative. Every one of these chapters is a very personal story. It's like, do I really want the public to see this? But
it's like bearing yourself raw.
Yeah. So I think there's something in it for everybody, and I admit to myself that it's not just a easy read. So there's places a lot of people won't relate to, but I think there's something in it for everybody. And
absolutely. So it's got that human story in there because it comes from so personally you know, chunks of rock, ultimately. Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
So. Well, thank you so much, Robin. It's been a pleasure speaking to you this afternoon. The book is called The Mountain, Journeys in High Places. You can pick it up on Amazon or, of course, on the Talk Radio Europe bookshop. Robin, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Feeling under the weather? You can Teladoc that. Actually, for almost everything health-related, checkups, check-ins, and everything in between, you can Teladoc that. For your physical health or for your mental health, you can Teladoc all that. We've got doctors, therapists, specialists, and coaches all available by web or app. Get started today at TeladocHealth.com. That's TeladocHealth.com.